Welcome to Motherhood in Hollywood, episode 118. My guest today is showrunner, executive producer, and creator of Dark Matter, shows like Stargate, SG-1, Stargate Atlantis, the Stargate Universe. His name is Joseph Malazzi, and we have a lot to talk about. Can't wait to share this with you.
Come on, Mama!
Grab your popcorn and goobers. It's time for Motherhood in Hollywood with your host, Heather Brooker. This is a crude prude's perspective on being a full-time mom in showbiz. She's not a perfect mom, but she can play one on TV. Hold on to your butts. Here's...
Hey, friends. I hope you're having a lovely week so far. I am pumped about this episode because I feel like I learned so much and I didn't even have to leave my house. So my guest is Joseph Malazzi. He is the showrunner for a show called Dark Matter. And it was on the Sci-Fi Network. It just recently got canceled. And his perspective and his insights and what he's sharing about the process of what happens when you get a show canceled or have a show canceled is something I never knew before. I feel like I learned a lot from him, and he's very open and very honest about that. But he's also really open about the process of becoming a writer on a TV show, like gives great advice on where to start, kind of get your foot in the door, kind of how the process works as you move up the chain, because he worked on a lot of very popular sci-fi shows like this in the Stargate universe, which if you've been following along at home, you know, Chris, my sweet little nerdy husband, is a big fan of. And so, it's just a great interview and a wonderful perspective that I'm super excited to share with you guys. As far as things that are happening around here, you guys know I'm on this kind of wellness journey. If you've read the post I put up, had a lot of wonderful feedback and comments, and you know, people emailed me and messaged me telling me that they're feeling similar things to what I'm feeling as moms when we get so tired, just like overwhelmingly tired. And sometimes it feels insurmountable, but you somehow manage to find a way because you have to. You have to get your kids to school. You have to, help out with dinner, do stuff around the house, go to work. You know, we have to do these things. And it feels very, insurmountable. I mean, there's just really no other word. But we just do it. We just sort of go into our mom mode and we get it done. Well, I've been feeling this way and feeling kind of just exhausted to my core lately. And Chris reminds me it's because I have 9 jobs. Like, I'm doing so many things and I should probably cut back. But it's more than that. This kind of overwhelmingly tired feeling it goes deeper than that. So I'm on this journey, this exploration journey to find out what could be causing it. And I'm going to be posting this on my website soon, but I got some pretty disappointing and news from my doctor. It's not good. It looks like I might have to have surgery and remove my gallbladder. So, yay! Super excited about that. Which is just sort of like a really... I'm still wrapping my head around it because I just found out in the last week or so. I don't want to have any sort of surgery. I don't want to have anything, any organs removed from my body. I know people say, oh, you can live without your gallbladder. But I feel like... if God put it in your body, maybe you should have it. Maybe it serves a purpose and you shouldn't remove it. But it is causing me a lot of pain and tremendous pain, actually. And I can't go on. So I have to have something done. So I'm wondering if maybe that's part of the reason or maybe connected to why I'm feeling so tired and all of this stuff. So stay tuned. Make sure you follow me on motherhoodinhollywood.com and on the Instagram and Facebook, Motherhood in Hollywood, and over on Twitter at Heather Brooker, because I'll be posting more details about that and some other things I'm doing and learning. I'm looking into a wellness retreat coming up in a few weeks that I'm kind of excited about. So make sure you guys stay tuned for that. Channing and I went and saw the My Little Pony movie this weekend. We got a sneak preview of that, and it is every bit as magical as you dream it could be. It is colorful. It is cheerful. There is friendship everywhere. The music is great. Sia is one of the new ponies in the movie. And Channing is such a huge fan of My Little Ponies. I wasn't as much of a fan growing up. I don't know why. I never really watched My Little Pony. Or I don't really remember it if I did. But she is a huge fan. She's watching it right now in the other room. Hashtag parenting. And so we were so excited to go to this special event with Build-A-Bear. We made a little pony. She picked a Pinkie Pie. And we got to go see the movie, which was so, so, so much fun. So thank you so much to Lionsgate for inviting us to go and do that. All right. So that's it for my mommy monologue. I want to get to this interview right away. I feel like you are going to be... this is a real inside look here at making television, at writing, at science fiction, what goes into being a sci-fi writer and the fandom there. And Joseph was so gracious to share his time with me and his knowledge. And I really appreciate it. So here you go, guys. Here's my interview with the showrunner of Dark Matter, Joseph Malazzi. I'm excited to talk to you for a couple different reasons, and we're going to talk about Dark Matter in just a second. But first, I want to talk about your experience with sci-fi. You have worked on some pretty incredible sci-fi shows and some that my husband and I have been fans of for quite a while. I would love to know where your interest or your passion for sci-fi shows and sci-fi television comes from.
Well, to be honest, I think it all began with comic books. Growing up, I was always a big fan of comic books. And, there is a sci-fi angle to comic books, comic books like the Avengers and the X-Men. You know, you're dealing with genetics and mutations. And, that my love for comics, I wouldn't say evolved because, I've always been a comic book fan. I continue to read comic books, but I guess maybe expanded into hard sci-fi. My mother's, noticed I was an avid reader early on. So basically she kind of fed my desire to read by gifting me books by Isaac Asimov, Arthur C. Clarke, Harlan Ellison. And so, throughout my life, I've been a very voracious reader, something I continue to do. But to be honest with you, at the end of the day, it was really by happenstance that I ended up in the world of sci-fi or writing for sci-fi. It turns out our agent, our Canadian agent, represented Robert Cooper, who was an executive producer on Stargate. And at way back when, Paul and I, my then writing partner, we had just wrapped up production on like a teen sitcom called Student Bodies that we wrote, I think, like almost 2/3 of the episodes for. And then we did a couple of 1-hour action dramas. And then Rob told our agent that they were looking to staff, find writers for season 4 of Stargate SG-1. And they had trouble finding writers just because, it's kind of a tough show to get with its mythology and just tone. Mm-hmm. So Paul and I pitched them. They liked the pitch. We wrote a script. They liked the script. We were hired and joined the writing staff in season 4 and ultimately sort of worked our way up the ranks and worked on SG-1, worked on Atlantis, worked on Stargate Universe, and eventually became showrunners.
How important do you think it is for future writers, because there's a lot of people who are writers and actors that listen to my show, and how important do you think it is for somebody looking to write on a sci-fi show that they have a familiarity with sci-fi in general, or the comic book lore behind some of these shows that are coming out now? Do you think that's important, or do you think it's okay to come in kind of blind?
I find when you're writing, it kind of helps to be a little blind because you're not influenced by ideas. But when you're going into pitch, I think you really need to do your research, not only for the show you're pitching, but kind of what has come before, and kind of immerse yourself in the world. Just because, when we were working on Stargate, for instance, we would pitch out ideas, and Brad, who was always a huge Star Trek fan, would point out, "Oh, Star Trek already did it. Star Trek already did it." And it was very hard for us to bring
that would
in.
Be annoying, by the way.
Yeah, it was very annoying. Ultimately, you just find a way to make it your own. For instance, back one of the first episodes we did for Stargate SG-1 was an episode called Window of Opportunity. It was a time loop episode, And I remember, you know, we were pitching it out and spinning it with Robert Cooper at the time. And he's, you know, he was kind of leading us in a certain direction. And ultimately, and, you know, it came a point where I said, we're just going to be remaking Groundhog Day. And he was like, exactly. And we did. And it turned out to be one of the most popular episodes of Stargate SG-1, just because, I mean, it's kind of a chestnut, this conceit of the time loop episode. But what made it special was A, the humor, but B, it was, you know, it was about our characters. It was O'Neill and Teal'c who were usually, I wouldn't say the dummies, but certainly the, you know, the unscientifically inclined, or maybe scientifically uninclined, mm-hmm. who had to basically figure it out. And so some, I want to say like 20 years later, when we were, you know, just doing this last season Dark Matter, I knew for a fact that I wanted to do a time loop episode. So I ended up watching 24 time loop episodes from various shows that have done the time loop scenario. And I kind of distilled the formula down to kind of the, you know, the touchstones, what works, what doesn't, and created a time loop episode for Dark Matter that, again, had the humor and was very much about our characters, and it became a fan favorite. So, I mean, I think it really helps to do your homework, you know, especially if you're going in and pitching, because, you know, we had a hard time finding freelance writers, because they would come in, they would pitch, and either it was a story that we had done, we were in the process of doing, or a story that had already been done elsewhere. And again, it doesn't mean that you can't do it. You just need to give us a spin that makes it, you know, kind of personal to us, or specific to our show.
Do you think that all sci-fi stories have already been done? Is it sort of like that, you know, that saying in Hollywood, all comedies have already been done, all jokes have already been done, all stories have already been told? Is the same sort of true in sci-fi? Or do you think there's more to play with there because you're dealing with other universes, other worlds, and that sort of thing?
Yeah, you know what? I hate to say it, and I don't, people are not going to like it, but I totally agree with that. Stories are already, you know, the stories have already been told. Now, you know, it's really a way of making it unique to whatever, your characters or your world, or by introducing new technologies. I mean, at the end of the day, it really depends what you mean by a new story. You know, for instance, you can pick any series, really, and take an episode, and you can see parallels to, you know, probably a dozen, 24 other shows that have done something similar. Right. And yet, at the same time, it's unique to that specific series.
Is it like the characters and their dynamics? Is that how you can differentiate the different, you know, black hole, time loop, you know, encounters with aliens, those types of stories? Is it how your characters in your show address them? Is that what makes it different?
Yeah, absolutely. At the heart of every series are the characters. And there's one thing I just keep hammering and hammering, and it's something I learned on Stargate, is that viewers will tune in for the premise or the hook, but they stay for the characters. And really, it's what you do with the characters that keeps them coming back. And you're absolutely right. I mean, we, you know, another great example is we did a time travel episode this year on Dark Matter that kind of I likened to Back to the Future meets Stranger Things. And it was another fan favorite, just because it took our characters and placed them in kind of a suburban setting. They had to go undercover as a suburban family, and it was just a lot of fun, and there were some really great character moments that the fans really responded to. So yes, absolutely, you have to make it about the characters, and that's really the biggest advice I could offer someone who's going in to pitch. You know, can you come up with a great premise, which is important, but really find the character angle, the relationship angles, and you know that I think will resonate with a producer or a decision maker.
Okay, everybody write that down. Everybody that's listening. That's good advice. And that's such a great reminder, too, for anybody who's getting into the writing process or maybe even somebody who's been in it for a long time. It's just important to focus on your characters. I would love to know how you transitioned into executive producing and show running. Was Dark Matter your first show to run?
Not really. I mean, I have to, give it up to Brad Wright and Robert Cooper, who were the co-showrunners on Stargate when Paul and I joined. One of the great things about Stargate, it was that the production was very welcoming to new talent and was a great place to essentially foster learning. And Brad and Robert were always very good about allowing us to learn on the job and rise through the ranks. And we started off as co-producers and we'd sit in on meetings and the years went by and we rose through the ranks, producers and supervising producers and co-execs and executive producers. And, in the end, we were co-showrunning Stargate Universe with Brad. And along the way, we just learned all facets of the production. I know when I first got started as a writer, and this is something I think is true for the vast majority of script writers, they look at the career of script writing and they think, oh, I want to write movies because that's where you want to be. And I'll tell you, movies is not where you want to be if you're a writer because you're treated like crap. unless you're Robert Towne or someone huge, you'll write a draft or you'll sell a script and ultimately it will be rewritten or taken out of your hands. You'll maybe write or get a writing assignment to write a movie, which is very rare, I think, but it happens. And then you'll subsequently be rewritten, or maybe you'll be hired to come in and rewrite someone else's script.
I've heard that happens a lot, where they'll buy an original idea or an idea from a writer or script and then bring in the punch up people, come in and it gets rewritten.
Occasionally uncredited.
Yeah.
Like I said, no respect. It's very rare for a writer to be invited on a movie set. And when they are, I mean, I have a story from this old friend who wrote one of the Marvel superhero movies and told me that he was invited on set. He was very excited and he met one of the stars and, where the producer said, oh, this is so-and-so, he's a writer. And he said, she looked at me like I was something she had discovered on the bottom of her shoe.
Oh, now, no.
In fairness, it wasn't a great script. So,
Was it Scarlett Johansson? You can tell me. Was it ScarJo?
It was not Scarlett Johansson, but I will not say who. But in any case, however, if you get into television, that's where the power is as a writer. You have creative influence. You run the show. You become a creative showrunner. So at the end of the day, you create a show. You call the shots. You're in casting. You're in prep. You're deciding what the spaceship will look like. You're deciding what the aliens will look like. You're deciding who you want to what kind of costumes you want for specific episodes. You go in and you do your cut. You're in editing as well. You're dealing with the network. There is really no comparison. And frankly, there's more opportunities in television. And the money is better, I would say, just because, yes, there are examples of writers who write million-dollar movies, but the chances of actually writing any script are very small, and the chances of the script you write making you a millionaire are equally small. So, TV is a great avenue, is a great opportunity.
And that's shifted quite a bit, don't you think, over the last 20 years or so? Because it used to be movies is where it's at. Like, you wanted to be a movie star. You wanted to be a big movie director, producer, whatever. But now there's been such a monumental shift in television and the quality of television. it's no longer the big three networks, and you can really explore different worlds and storylines and people. I think, at least just from my perspective, like, that's sort of the what's been happening is so few movies get made. Like, it is all the big Avenger superhero movies, you know.
You're absolutely right. I mean, you have a choice. You could add, you know, stay home. Sorry.
That's okay.
At the end of the day, you can stay home and invest in a show where you see, you know, character evolution over time, you know, action, adventure, twist, turns, you know, really interesting, well-structured plots, or you can, you know, go to the movies and watch a film that makes you feel like you're watching somebody else play a video game for 3 hours.
That's true.
Last time I saw a superhero movie. So there you go.
Let's talk about Dark Matter a little bit more and your experience on that show. It was such a great show. What happened? walk me through everything that happened, especially in the last couple of weeks.
Well, I mean, you know, we premiered well. We've always been, you know, a top sci-fi show. And I, you know, I don't know what to tell you. And essentially, we broke season four. I sold my place on the West Coast and moved here to Toronto so I could finish up seasons four and five. And then the day after I landed, I got word that we had been officially canceled, which, you know, ticked me off a little. Well, I mean, sure. Look, I know I get the business, and it's you know, it's all about the numbers, but it really didn't make sense to me because, as I said, our ratings were very strong. You know, I thought, oh, maybe it's a creative decision. They don't like the creative. And I reached out and said, hey, I'd be willing to come down and pitch to you guys if you want to, you know, want to know what we have in store for season four. And they said no. And we said, okay, if it's the money, they pay a licensing fee. We're what's called an acquisition, which makes us significantly cheaper than the originals. Okay. And we even said we'll come down even on the, you know, the small price you pay on the acquisition. We're willing to come way down and just let us know what number makes it work. And they kind of passed and still canceled us. And, you know, I eventually reached out and said, look, at least give the fans closure. After all, it's a fan thing, right? And they weren't interested, which kind of surprised me. But maybe not, but
what goes through your mind as some, you know, when something like that happens? Because this is your baby. This is a show you pitched from the beginning. You ran it for two seasons. Mm-hmm. You had visions, obviously, beyond those two seasons. You know, I'm always fascinated whenever popular shows or shows that I've enjoyed just sort of go away, and you don't really know why. You as a fan are left going, hey, what happened? I can only imagine being so intimately involved in it, and it's also your livelihood, having something like that go away. So, you know, what kind of was going through your mind when that's happening?
Well, you know, obviously very frustrated, because from a creative standpoint, I had the 5-year plan in my head. Mm-hmm. So I'd set up, you know, all these balls and you know, all these setups that I was looking to pay off. I had the answers to all the questions. I mean, nothing that I hate more than watching a show and realizing, these guys are making it up as they go along.
Oh, sure.
Which is what, you know, I set out not to do with the show. And just from a creative standpoint, very frustrating. From kind of a more sort of emotional standpoint, I tend to get very defensive about my cast and crew. Because you know they loved coming in to do the show. I mean, we'd go away on hiatus and they'd go away and work on other productions. Then they come back and they'd be like, you know, they say, hey, it's great to be back, and you know, really looking forward to it. And we were like a family.
Yeah, I was gonna say in television, it sort of becomes a family, and the showrunner, you know, probably feels a sense of responsibility for that family. And I am sure that you felt a lot of that as well.
I mean, yeah, the cast and crew were like family, but the fans were like family as well. Mm-hmm. You know, I keep bringing this up. TV, it's sort of like this unwritten rule or contract, unspoken contract you have with like a broadcaster, in which they put a show on the air and you as an audience need to watch it if you want to keep it on the air. And our audience upheld their end of the bargain. They watched it. They made it one of sci-fi's most watched shows, and it still got canceled. You know, at the end of the day, I think a lot of it also had to do with the fact that sci-fi is divided into sci-fi originals in LA and sci-fi acquisitions. And we were a sci-fi acquisition, and our champion in New York, Chris Regina, who, you know, I can't say enough nice things about Chris. He's a very smart guy, and you know, he loved the show and championed the show for us. He ended up leaving. And once he left, you know, I that's when I started to get nervous, and I thought, you know, this, at the end of the day, this is not going to come down to ratings or money. It's just, you know, we've lost our, you know, our cheerleader mm-hmm. there.
Yeah, and I think sometimes, you know, the fans, the fans don't know the inside track of everything that's going on. They just know that they liked a show, and then it went away for no reason, seemingly no reason. But there's a lot of business involved in show business, and for whatever reason, the powers that be just sort of, you know, change their mind or what have you. But it's just so interesting to me that even, you know, as hard as you work, you make it up and you get you make it up to the ladder, climb up the ladder, you get your show, you're the showrunner, you're in charge, there's still somebody above you that can say, pull the plug or make you go in different directions creatively and that sort of thing. So it's like, do we ever get to be fully creatively in charge in Hollywood, do you think?
You know, I think as writers, we can accomplish a lot and become very powerful. But at the end of the day, there will always be those kind of final decision makers who, you know, have the ability to impede us. And, you know, it really depends on who you are. You know, the most successful writer showrunner could have their show canceled and could, you know, pick up another show. It will mean that their original show will be canceled. It won't be coming back. But, you know, they'll go on and you know, create another world.
I would love to know, first of all, do you want to share any of the stories that you were thinking of what might happen with the Dark Matter show? And also, what do you want to do next? Do you feel like this kind of took the wind out of your sails a little bit, or do you have some other ideas brewing?
You know, for what I had planned for Dark Matter, I mean, it's, I would love to give the fans some sort of conclusion. I mean, Dark Matter kind of started as a comic book. I mean, really, it was a pilot script, but I reached out to Dark Horse Comics and ended up turning those first two episodes into a 4-issue comic book that was subsequently used to sell the series, because, of course, everybody likes IP, established properties. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you know, going back to the world of comic books is a possibility. I mean, I had two more seasons planned. Season 4 would have been the battle against the aliens, and season 5 would have been dealing with the Android Rebellion. So those, you know, in broad strokes, so mm-hmm. that was the game plan. As for what's next for me, you know, I don't know. I mean, I'm certainly tired. I've actually worked 20 years straight. I've been actually very fortunate in that respect.
That's amazing.
You know, yeah, that I haven't been free in 20 years straight. But on the other hand, it is exhausting. I like to take maybe a couple of months off to read. I've taken meetings. I'll take more meetings when I head down to LA in about a month. You know, I have pilots of my own that I like to go out with. But then again, I've been presented with some very interesting opportunities, show running, you know, material that didn't originate with me. I said I'm an avid reader. I would love to potentially option a few titles and turn them into TV show.
So you would be open to, you know, somebody else's script or show and running that as well?
Yeah, it really depends. Whether I need to really love the material. B, as equally important, I really have to love the people behind it, because I'm just kind of at the stage of my career where it's, you know, life's too short to deal with jerks, and I'm not desperate that I, you know, really need
to
work with a jerk. So, you know, I would love to work with people who are pleasant to work with, just, you know, and I did it on Stargate and I did it on Dark Matter. So they're out there. And, you know, if I was going to take on someone else's project, I don't think I would take on a project that was, you know, someone sends me a script and says, hey, can you help me set it up? I think it would be more along the lines of a production company coming to me and saying, hey, you know, we've got this script that a network is interested in. We want to do a little development on it, or, you know, we're looking for a showrunner to, you know, get it up and running.
Would you want to do sci-fi again, or maybe try something different?
You know, most of the pilot scripts that I have are not sci-fi. I would love to branch out into drama, into, you know, even like mystery genre, like fantasy or horror. But I love sci-fi. I certainly won't say no to sci-fi.
And how are you, like, how do you balance your family time as a showrunner? You know, because that's a tremendous amount of time. I mean, I know you said that you've been working for 20 years straight. You know, it's television is all consuming, especially when you're at that level. How do you balance time with your family, or find time to, you know, find some me time?
You know, it is tough, I will admit, you know, simply because, you know, the show ends and everybody goes away on hiatus, and then they come back and they'll say, what did you do while you were on hiatus? And you'll say, I wrote scripts. I mean, my routine for the past 3 years has been, you know, get the show set up. I run the writer's room. We go off and write, and then I oversee prep. And then we go into production, and then I'm in post, and then I'm thinking about the following season, and then we roll into the writer's room and we kind of repeat the same thing. But, you know, unlike most shows, Dark Matter didn't really have a writer's room per se. I mean, we have a writer's room at the beginning of a season where we'll discuss what the stories are going to be. But once we're in production, I'm the guy who rewrites everything.
Wow, that's a tremendous, you know, amount of work.
It was a lot of work. And, you know, it's a type of work that, you know, you're on set late, and then you go home and you're constantly thinking about, you know, your scripts. As a writer, no matter what, you're always doing that. In fact, I used to sort of joke that I often did some of my best writing when I was in the shower, when I was driving, or when my ex used to talk to me over dinner. just watching my ex. But, you know, right now I have kind of a very relaxed, you know, home life. I've got an amazingly supportive girlfriend who, you know, is a fan of sci-fi, but understands the type of pressure I'm under. And we have no kids. So it's not like, you know, daddy's, you know, taking time away from the kids. I have two beautiful dogs. But, you know, they don't require, you know, quite much. As much.
That's true.
Yeah.
Well, I am fascinated with your story, and I am so appreciative of you being so honest and forthcoming about your experiences and everything that's happening. I'm going to send you my script so you can work on. No, I'm just kidding. That would be douche move.
I will give actually one small piece of advice that I've dispensed before. The fact that basically I got my start in animation, and I know a lot of new writers, you know, they'll do the standard thing where they're going to write a spec and write a pilot and then try to get an agent and try to get their foot in the door. And that's great. And you should totally write a pilot and write the spec, but, you know, really consider trying to get your foot in the door in animation, because A, they're more receptive to new writers. B, the format is very similar. So essentially you're going to be honing your craft. It forces you to think visually, and C, it allows you to hone your craft and get paid at the same time. And it's a great sort of, you know, entry level to the world of screenwriting, and then, you know, just take it from there. So that is just kind of my personal experience.
That's great advice. Anybody who can kind of get their foot in the door and get paid, get experience and get paid at the same time in this business, that is a win in my book. Well, I am excited to see what you're going to do next, but no pressure. You take your time, enjoy your All right. break. I am so grateful for you to take the time and talk with us. I really do appreciate it.
Well, thank you for inviting me, and maybe let's do this again.
Yes. Sooner than- Yeah, I would love that. I would love that. And you also have a blog too, or a website, right?
I do. Actually, I've been blogging for over 10 years. I haven't missed a day. Originally, it was just supposed to be a food journal. And then when I went back to Stargate, I decided to just chronicle everything behind the scenes, you know, on production on Stargate for many, many years, behind the scenes on production on Dark Matter. I figured as a writer, it forces you to write every day.
Forces you to write. Yeah, that's absolutely right. And then, so I'm going to put information up on where people can follow you on your social media channels, and as well as keep up with all of your happenings on your blog. Joseph, right. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me.
Thanks, Heather.
All right, everybody, that's going to do it for me. Make sure you check out motherhoodinhollywood.com for the latest on this episode. And have a wonderful week, you guys. Remember, I'm not a perfect mom, but I can play one on TV. Bye.
Mama funny.
Balls.